Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeannie Nguyen, and I am the liaison for the Academic Facilities Council of IFMA here in Houston. The Dolby system that we're using is very user-friendly. I'm going to go ahead and start the recording already. This is going to be an informal call, so if you have a question about how to use the online community, you can just type it into the chat box on the left-hand side or just interrupt me. No big deal. Okay? I'll go ahead and start sharing my desktop for you guys to see.
Jeannie, this is Joseph. So you're on site right now?
Yeah.
And this is what, off of the AFC site, correct?
Yes, actually, all council members have access to the online community, but once you log in, you only have access to your specific council that you are a member of.
Okay.
Do you guys see my screen right now?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
Yes. So,
wonderful. I'm not sure if any of you or many of you have used the site before, but it is ifmacommunity.org. The link is somewhere on the IFMA homepage, but if you can't remember it, just ifmacommunity.org and save it as one of your favorites. So the first thing to do is sign in, of course, and on your top right-hand side is the sign-in button. Go ahead and click on that tab, and your login is your IFMA member ID number. It does say email address. We haven't actually turned that function on yet, so go ahead and use your member ID number. If you don't remember, you can just ask me or email somebody from IFMA and let them know that you need your member ID number and your password. It's the same login you use to log into the IFMA website and also the same one that you use to log into the Academic Facilities Council member protected area of the website that we have now.
It's our ID number, right? Our
yes.
Member number?
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'll go ahead and log in with my number and my password and show you guys what it looks like inside and how to use it. Okay, now that we've logged in, this is my profile. This is what I see from the back end. This is not a public preview for other members to see. So here is my conversation area. This is private. You can conversate with other members within the community, so that way it's not public where they can see. You have a section area for your friends, which you can save individuals you actually know or maybe someone in your area or your chapter, just so it's easier to reach to their page and see their profile or what's going on with them. Okay, now I'm going to show you guys how to edit your profile. Right here on the left side, we've got three tabs. It says View Public Profile, View Your Conversations, and Edit Your Profile.
Jeannie,
yes, Pat.
Question, is there a way I can make this type bigger?
The
I can read it, but barely.
Actually, on the community server Adobe, at the very bottom, there's a toggle where it says you can do full screen. Do you see that?
Yep.
Okay, and then you can click on that, but that's as big as it will probably get.
Okay, that's much better.
Screen. Okay. Now I'm going to show you guys what my public profile looks like. I did upload an image of myself, and in my bio area, I just put some stuff. A lot of people like to put your personal bio or maybe how long you've been a member of IFMA, what you're doing right now, what facilities you run, and announcement area. The comments area, it's very similar to Facebook where you can leave comments on other pages. So these are some comments that were left here for me from Melissa and our administrator just to test some things out. Okay, so we'll go back to home, and to actually add that information on, you'll go to Edit Profile within your home page. We'll wait for this to load. And if you'd like to upload an image, it doesn't have to be of yourself. I mean, it could be your dog or your cat, whatever you'd like. Go ahead and click Yes to enable the avatar. And to upload the image, you'll just go to Browse, and wherever that image is, on your computer, on your desktop, or wherever, just click on that image, double-click or open it, and click Update. Your update will not be made immediately. You'll have to scroll down to the bottom of the page and click on Save on the bottom left, Save button. But before you do that, if you'd want to put information in your bio, it's kind of like in Outlook or when you use Microsoft Word. You can bold, italicize, underline, put smiley faces on there, things like that. And then scroll down to the bottom where you can change your information. You can change your language, put a different email on there. Maybe if you have a blog site or a gallery you want people to view, and then click Save on that. Now, within this Edit Profile, it's very important to go to Site Options, which is right next to Profile Options. And here you can turn on and off and enable different notifications you'll receive. You can receive them via email. So if you don't want to receive them, you can click on No or Yes. You can change the font size, the order that you receive the post. And here I have my time zone. I have Central Time Zone. And what's very important is the bottom signature. I would recommend everybody to put your signature or at least your name and email, so that way when you respond to a post or create a new post, whenever your message goes out, it has your contact information provided at the bottom in case a member wanted to email back to you directly, maybe about a certain topic that you were experienced on. Okay.
So, Jeannie, if I may, this is Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
When we have someone that's created a post and they're asking about, I don't know, how many bicycle racks you have on campus or whatever, mm-hmm. at this point, we can either subscribe or unsubscribe to that, or would this be for all posts?
It would actually be, I'll get to that in a second with forum subscriptions,
okay.
where you can get all posts. You can turn it off where you don't receive any of them, and you can log in and select the ones you do want to receive. It just depends. It's a little bit more different than the listserv itself. Okay. And the sign-in information. We recommend you not change your password in the online community, because if you change it here, it won't change in our main database here at headquarters. So if you do want to change your password, just call or email someone at IFMA headquarters and have it changed here. So that way it'll be changed for all access you have login on any IFMA websites. Okay? Now that's how you edit your profile. I'm going to go back to the home option and show you guys the friends area. There, you can click on individuals that are your friends, and you can go straight to their profile and view what they have on here. Linda DeTine, she is with the Kansas City chapter and also in the Environmental Health and Safety Council, and you can view her other friends. Here's Carrie and Jeff to view their pages. Now, if I was wanting to be a friend with someone, you'll go to their profile, and they'll have an option here to add as a friend. And they'll get a notification that says that someone wants to add them as a friend. So they'll have to log in to approve or disapprove. So since Jeff is already my friend, I can remove him if I'm mad at him for any reason and don't want to be friends with him anymore. I can go ahead and remove him. Okay, now I'm going to go into the forum subscriptions itself. You guys do have tabs up here on your top when you sign in. You'll have the home, the media, and the forums tab. The control panel is actually... you won't have that. Just for the administrator. Every post that goes out through the online community, it goes to us here at headquarters, and we'll approve that message. So as long as you're not posting trying to sell something or something like that, we won't let that post go through. Or if it's an inappropriate post, we have certain etiquette that we have to send out and everyone to read and follow those guidelines. I'll go here into the post. Now, since I'm the moderator, I get to see every single posting from every single council and community. But, of course, with the Academics Council, we'll go into the AFC portion of the postings. Once you're logged in and you click on Forums, what you'll see here is a listing of all the posts that have been since we started this online community last year. As of right now, they will all be saved here and archived here. Okay, and here are the certain specific posts. If you'd want to respond or read to them, you can actually just click on it. Let's say Operations and Maintenance Benchmark in Schools. I'll click on this particular post, and you can scroll all the way to the bottom to view the first posting. You can reply to them specifically, and, of course, the delete and editing is just for the moderation. But this would be how you can view the previous post, and you can reply back to them. But if you wanted to create a new posting yourself, you would go to your forms page, and right here on the top right, it says write a new post. You can go ahead and just click on that. And if you're a member of more than one council, then whichever member you are a member of, it will have a listing of the council or community. But if you're only in the AFC, then only the Academic Facilities Council tab would pull up, and you would click on that. Now, once you click on that, it's just like an email message. Just go ahead and put in a subject line and put your message in, and you can select a tag. I'll go over what a tag is if you guys don't know. It's just like a main word in your subject or in your message that if you wanted to look for later, for example, if it was about benchmarking, you would tag it benchmark. So later on, if you wanted to do a search for benchmark, this certain message would pull up. Now, if you were going to post a new message, let's say we'll just say, how is the weather? Okay. The tag, we would put weather. And here you can select to email replies to the post, or you can unselect. Joseph, this was kind of like what you were talking about. If you wanted to receive it by email or not, you have an option to not get emails back to about your post, but you can log in and search for them yourself.
Okay.
Without having the numerous emails being sent to you. And the great thing about posting a message now, you can actually add attachments. So you can add or update a file. For example, if someone was asking for a certain job description, does anyone have an example? You can just go ahead and attach it, and the other members can view that and use that as a sample. Okay, I'll go back to forums. And I was talking about tags earlier, and here is the section for the tags. The larger the font is on the word, that's the more posts have been received on that topic. Now, everyone that is a part of the AFC is logged in and subscribed to the online community at this point. If you go under Shortcuts and click on Forum Subscriptions, this is where you can turn on and off your subscriptions. This also is, if you're a member of one or more councils, then you'll have one or more listings on here. For example, the Academic Facilities Council. Yes, I am subscribed to it. Any posts that go through in this particular council will come through my email. If you don't want that and you want to just log in and check the archives yourself whenever you feel like it, then you can go ahead and just click on it again and they'll say no. Now, another great thing about the IFMA online community is with the listserv, you can just send a message through your email, but with this you can also do that. If you don't want to log in to the online community and to post a new post, you can just send it to this email address, afc.council@ifmacommunity.org, through your email, and it will go directly into the online community itself without you having to log in to post that. Okay? We'll go back to forums. Now, you're going to have a section for shortcuts. I'll go into the AFC section again. And under shortcuts, you can view the posts that you have not read already, which is a great tool, I would think. Since some of you are so busy and you don't have time to read all of them, you can kind of see which ones you haven't read and which ones you have, and to go back to them. Of course, this is all the ones that I haven't read, which is a lot. Okay. And also, you can view who is online, which is a great tool, and view all the users. I'll just do a search, and then you can see this is actually total. Since I'm a member, I can see all the council's communities. We have approximately 6,100 members already logged into the system. And with an AFC, you'll probably have about 500, and you can view their own personal profiles and see what they have on there to get to know other members and friend them or not to. Does anybody have any questions?
Not so far.
Not so far? I actually just went to the gist of everything. I mean, it's really simple. It's tedious at times, but once you get to know how to use it, it's really simple. It's a great tool. If you guys have some free time, I would recommend you to log in, play around with it. I mean, you can't break it. Just edit some profile information, search around other profiles, see what other members are posting. Maybe send something out just to see if you get any response back.
Jeannie, is there any write-up on any of this?
What do you mean, Hap?
Well, a set of instructions.
Yes.
But what you just told us in written form.
Yes, we do have something, but it's not in great detail. Actually, this is recorded, so it's used for playback. But on the newsletter, at the very last page, there is some information on how to post a posting on the community server and how to log in,
okay,
if that would be helpful. And I can resend that to you, Hap, if you'd like.
Okay, if you would.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Jeannie, did you, and maybe I misheard you, so anybody that's already an AFC member has access to this?
Yes.
So it's automatic?
Yes.
Ah.
Actually, it's not automatic. We made it automatic. When we first got the online community, we sent out emails for members to know that, like, this is a great tool. If you'd like to use it, you've got to log in and subscribe, yes, to receive the messages. But with the email being so long, we went in and I logged everybody in. So now all AFC members are logged in. If you don't want to be logged in, you can go in and select no under Forbes subscriptions, and then you won't be active in it. But you can log in to view it, but you won't receive them.
Okay. So if you log in, but don't create a profile or more completely detail your profile, will you see any information?
Yes, you'll still see everything, but yours will just have a blank image and no name, but you can still respond to others.
Okay, so if I want to know, for example, who my counterparts are up in Boston or maybe down in Dallas, I'll still be able to at least map over to those individuals, even though I might not see their picture. I'll be able to see some data.
If they put it on there, if they change, like in your edit profile area, if they put maybe their name or their city that they're in, then it would. Like I put Houston, Texas on my location and my name. But if not, it would just say anonymous on there
so,
until you change that.
Okay, so when I become an AFC member, I provide IFMA with my name, address, et cetera. That data does not transfer over
to
the profile section. Okay. Okay, so each member has access, but to the extent that we can see information about that person depends on what extent they complete their profile.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
Jeannie, it's Harry Farshman. Quick question. On the login, you said we use our member number for the ID?
Yes.
Okay.
Your member ID number, your IFMA number.
Okay, it's the IFMA number. All right. And then what about, where does the password originate from?
The password is your IFMA member password. It should have been created when you had signed up for an IFMA membership. So it would really depend on what you put down on the form. But if you don't know it.
Okay, no, I don't know what mine is, but I'll look at my file or I'll send you an email or give you a buzz.
Jeannie, I'll probably call you back or send you an email. I can log into IFMA, but it won't let me log into the online community.
Really? Okay. Sometimes that may happen, and we'll have to look into it. That has happened to a few members before. So, yeah, just send me an email, and I'll provide you my information.
Okay, great.
Jeannie, this is Steve. Do firewalls tend to prevent you from logging in?
No. We haven't had that problem yet.
Okay, just curious.
Jeannie, this is Katie McDonald. I am logged in all right, but I don't get any forum subscriptions available or
any
posts.
Okay. I'm getting all these issues now. Now, are you clicking under forums and there's nothing listed?
Nothing.
Do you have
an icon? It says there are no posts to show. This could be because there are no posts due to a filter, but I've never been here before, so I have no idea what the filter would be. And then if I click forum subscriptions, it does use the following form, but there's no form.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to provide my email in a little bit, and if you could do a print screen for me, and I can see if I can send it over to IT and see if they can fix that problem.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on the online community?
Oh, pretty neat.
Can you edit your profile, Jeannie? How do you upload your picture there?
How do I upload it?
Yeah.
Just go into your edit profile and click yes to enable your avatar.
Okay.
And click on browse.
Browse and pull a pick off your drive.
And wherever it's located on your drive.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's pretty slick.
That's that simple. It's very much like Facebook, isn't it?
Yeah, very similar,
yeah,
but it's more professional.
Yeah. Sure.
That's me and Dave Brady, you know. I had to do that.
What a cool tool this is.
Yeah, for sure.
We've just got to get the word out and got to get more members participating to use it, and then we can go on from there. We are still working on other tools and capabilities to turn on, which is you can see who is online at the moment and chat with them, a live chat. That function hasn't been turned on yet, but we are waiting to do that maybe sometime this year.
Yeah, I'm wondering if at the upcoming conference in June we shouldn't do a little 10 or 20-minute demonstration just to heighten the awareness of this.
Oh, yeah, we could definitely do that.
Yeah.
And, Jeannie, you say two ways to get into it is either through IFMA or, what was it, IFMAcommunities.org?
Yes, IFMAcommunity.org. It's the easiest way. If you go somewhere on the IFMA homepage to look for it, I mean, you're going to be searching for a while. I don't even know where it is. I just know it's somewhere on there. So IFMAcommunity.org.
Jeannie, this is Eric Lawrence. I was just trying, while you were on, to get into it, and I used my IFMA number initially, and then it asked for the password. I clicked on the couldn't remember the password, please remind me type thing at the bottom there. It says to change your password, you'll need to call IFMA.
Okay.
Will it not send me an email with my password?
No, it won't.
Okay,
we don't have that capability. I know. Okay, Eric, I'll talk to you after this, and I'll give you your password.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Not a problem. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and sign out then, and we'll lead into the roundtable discussions. Let me go back here and stop sharing. And we'll go back. I hope I have the right document. Okay, I did have some rounds. Yes.
This is Jolie Lucas. I just joined in because I didn't set an alarm clock. So will there be another one of these shortly?
Yes. Actually, we're starting to do them now just for the councils, but we still will be doing them in general to the council membership, hopefully within every 2 weeks.
Oh, okay, great. So they just send out announcements and log in.
And if you have any questions, Jolie, you can just contact me personally.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Not a problem. Now, as for the roundtable topics, I'm not sure if the AVC board, if you guys want to start off with this and kind of just some stuff I typed down, maybe something we can discuss over the call with the other members since we're all together right now.
Yep, this is Joseph. I'm at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Can I get an idea of who's who and who's where?
This is Hap Iverson, North Carolina A&T State University. Greensboro, North Carolina.
Eric Lawrence, Gwinnett Technical College, Atlanta, Georgia, campus architect.
Steve Showers, Towson University, Towson, Maryland.
I'm Doug Wilson.
Lucas. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm Doug Wilson, University of Calgary, Calgary, Alberta.
Jolie Lucas, I'm actually a planner. I'm not at a university. I'm located in Carlsbad, California.
Wow, great. Okay, the reason I ask is I think, Jeannie, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the, I think, roundtable subjects is the latest in classroom design or classroom technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's fascinating about this particular subject is how we as facility managers, space planners, et cetera, are kind of challenged now with the new generation of students coming on board, nicknamed the millennials. And you may or may not already be aware that one of the latest trends is color in classrooms. Certainly, technologies are always playing an ever-evolving and ever-changing role, but we're finding more and more that there's more of a step away from the traditional classroom setting proper in its grays or its blues, whatever would have been a standard color, into this multifaceted, almost rainbow effect.
Joseph, this is Bob Myrick here.
Yeah.
And we did one of these classrooms last summer. If you like, I got a response from 180 students in two different classes relative to that, and I can send that out to you. Because we did a rather wild colors in that particular room, including the carpets. I can send you some photos if you wish to also see the pictures, you know, kind of see what kind of wild colors were used in the room. Response was pretty good, and this was in an engineering school, and it surprised me because the two classes that were interviewed and asked to fill out questionnaires were engineering students, and surprisingly, a pretty positive response. The majority of the responses were very strong. And this is from came about because of a class that I was involved with last year in advising relative to some classroom studies and design. And the comments at that point were just exactly like you say. The students are wanting brighter, wilder colors in the classrooms.
I'm wondering, though, Bob, and I don't want to, you know, belabor the point, but it's interesting. When I speak to my faculty here and then others that teach, you know, within the, I guess, the northeastern part of the country, the consensus is that faculty are hesitant. They're saying, look, you know, students aren't here to be entertained. The reason for the muted colors in the past has been so that the attention is on the teacher. It's on the learning experience. And I'm wondering if in what you've done with your interviews or in what you've observed, does changing the color really enhance the learning experience? Does it really keep students more attentive? Is it just merely decorative?
I was going to ask a similar question, not so much necessarily on the learning experience, but are there any improvement in student performance or results or anything that you can match to it?
The performance is hard to say yet at this point. You know, I imagine we'd have to go into grades and compare, and it's pretty hard because, you know, your students aren't in the same room period after period or year after year to try to do the comparisons at this point.
So this was, what's your take on it, Bob? Was it merely aesthetics, or is it they simply want to feel that they're, you know, more energized and perhaps more youthful?
And maybe helping to keep them more awake and that sort of thing, instead of, you know, everything's so dull and boring that their mind's drifting off to other things? Don't know. Did I like the colors that were originally selected? No. I guess I'm an old fuddy-duddy. but I decided to go. Guess I went along with it anyway just to see what the reactions would be. And the questionnaire, you know, like I say, the majority of the students really liked it. And we even put some color on the tiles on the ceiling that said PSU, if you really look hard. Otherwise, you wouldn't notice that it was really that.
Well, Bob, aren't those, I think I recall seeing the photos, and you might have sent them to individuals. Are those or are they not on the AFC site?
I don't believe I have posted those, no.
Okay.
Some of those that were on the AFC were relative to past conferences.
That's what it was. Is there, as you, if I may, as you work through that colorization, as it were, did you do anything audiovisual or in the classroom technologies that may have been novel or a departure from what we've seen so far?
What we did, yes. We've had a lot of requests now for dual projection technology in the classrooms and two separate screens. So what we're doing is putting a document camera in with the instructional tech podium, so that they can use the document camera for almost anything, whether it's, you know, as an overhead or if they have objects they want to project up on the screen, they can do that and then use the other for PowerPoint or web-based training or whatever it is they're working on.
What about our friends in Calgary and further west out in California? Are you guys experiencing or seeing the same?
I haven't seen anything so far.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say that we've seen a push in that direction anyway. Not yet.
So what would a typical classroom be like that you currently have? Does it have dual projection and a document camera, et cetera?
Most of ours do not have the document camera. No, I think think there are a few theaters in, on campus that, that do have do a projection, but for the most part, most of them just have the one.
This is Katie McDonald from the University of Minnesota. We have been having a push for dual projection, and especially in the larger rooms, and I think we've found that the more technology we have across campus, the more push there is to make the bigger rooms fancier and more technology advanced.
That, you know, I really have to readily agree with that. We worked through here at Carnegie Mellon in our business school, I'm actually calling you guys from the Tepper School of Business, back in 2004, we did a lot of heady research and ran a pretty intense six-week renovation of 8 classrooms. And we ran the gamut in the design process of looking at rear projection, which would have been the ultimate because you're not standing in the line of light, as it were, from the overhead projectors. The flip side of that, of course, is usually most of us are dealing with existing spaces and you need a lot of depth for the rear projection, so it might not be practical. The other kind of facet to this that I found fascinating was as we went back to faculty and asked them, you know, what would be best and what wouldn't, is across the board, they said, Joseph, do not touch the blackboards, which astounded me. I would have thought with all of the whiteboard technology that's out there, from Idea Paint to the smart boards, et cetera, that they would have invited that. They said, no, given what we teach, how we teach, and how we have learned over the decades how students absorb information, the blackboard works best, which it truly just astounds me
to this
day.
That's an ongoing fight with specific departments for us. And we've had problems with the chalk dust damaging our projectors, and so there's sort of a balance there that we're trying to hit.
It's interesting you say that because we've had just the opposite, where they have at the campuses used the whiteboards exclusively. They find the dust lighter from the whiteboards, and it's getting the projectors more and having more issues, whereas the chalk dust is falling to the floor.
Huh.
And so we've had, to my surprise, too, some of the campuses away from University Park are converting back to chalkboards again.
Yeah, this is Steve. We're having, depending on the department, more and more people going back to chalkboards. And in other places, the whiteboards are preferred by far.
Steve, can I ask, are the whiteboards for you more popular in the flat classroom as opposed to the stepped classroom setup?
No, I don't seem to see any difference there. We're just completing our liberal arts building first phase, and we have tiered classrooms, the 90 persons, that sort of thing. And in there, depending again on the liberal arts faculty, they like the whiteboard, but in other places we get a request for a chalkboard. But it doesn't seem to have anything to do with flat or tiered.
Huh. We're also seeing a request for, in the flat classrooms, more whiteboard space. In fact, one faculty member came to me and said, if you can, I want whiteboard surface floor to ceiling. Now, I'm not quite sure about, nor am I convinced that that's going to cover all the sight lines, especially when you're down on your knees at the baseboard. what we are having fun with is Idea Paint. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah,
which is really great. It, for those of you who may be unfamiliar, it goes on like a white glossy paint. It has to cure for a certain period of time, but you get this fabulously smooth whiteboard surface that you literally can have floor to surface. And we're finding that in a faculty office setting, especially since we have a high concentration of research faculty, that that's ideal. They can literally write on the walls to their heart's content.
Do you use pens and materials that you would for a whiteboard?
I'm sorry?
Do you use the same pens and materials that you do for a whiteboard?
Yes, you can. And interestingly, if you let it cure after 7 days, you can use it. If by chance you make a mistake and use a permanent marker like a Sharpie or something, no harm, no foul. You simply write over it with a dry erase marker, and it reactivates the chemical reaction, and it'll wipe away. What my concern was is, as you know, with a standard whiteboard, after a period of time, And or if you use a permanent marker and try to clean that with the chemical cleaner, you get shadowing.
Right.
None of that with Idea Paint. It's extraordinary, just extraordinary. And it's a lot of fun. You can, you know, put it anywhere,
mm-hmm.
and it works extraordinarily well.
Do you have troubles? Excuse me. Go ahead.
We've also done a couple of rooms with glass whiteboards instead of
yes.
porcelain, and those are great for. They don't ghost ever either, but they do have some glare issues that we've been running into.
Yeah, I think that's the one downside is, you know, depending on where your office or classroom is in terms of, you know, the afternoon or morning sun, simply because it's a high sheen surface, you're going to get glare. You know, you can correct most of that with window coverings, but I agree.
At University Park, we've gone away from using any whiteboards in what we call our general purpose classrooms because we can't keep the markers in the classrooms. It gets to be too expensive, so that's one of the reasons we're sticking with the chalk and the chalkboard.
So they're growing legs?
They're growing legs, yep.
Probably arms and legs, I guess.
Most likely.
another item of interest that... we were talking about just before the call was LEED and green practices. There is a short story of our, I believe it was the fall conference last year up in Alberta, wherein there was a garbage can. Now, there's nothing all that exciting about a garbage can, but this one was placed in a very high traffic area, looked like a standard can, but it was sunk an additional 5 feet, as I recall, underground. The conference was, what, in October? They had put in the can earlier that year and hadn't emptied it literally for almost 6 months because it was self-compacting. Is anybody else experimenting or using a kind of green design on their campuses or in their schools?
We have a number of those cans on campus outside, both for our refundable pop and juice containers or beverage containers and for waste, solid waste as well. And they're very effective. I mean, we're replacing them about every quarter. We're kind of pulling that bag up and replacing it with a new one. So,
is that more a recycle focus where you have it labeled or could it be any kind of waste?
Well, it can be any kind of waste. We have three on campus now that handle just regular solid waste. And then we have a couple that are designed for the beverage containers.
Now, what we're finding is if we install those, we get a much higher usage rate. I'm just not sure quite why. But if we label them and if we say generic things like all paper or simply metal, meaning you can put in pop cans, whatever, or if we label it... what is their paper cans? Plastic is another one.
Right.
That people really seem to they respond well to that definition.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you're experiencing the same.
We actually just this week we put on a number of Rubbermaid glutton containers that had four separate bags, one for general waste, one for paper, one for refundable containers, and one for organics as well. And the response has been phenomenal. Actually, we've seen, you know, like beverage containers that have been there for years going empty, while these new bright and kind of bold containers are overflowing, sitting right beside it. So it's kind of interesting to see how the users have reacted to seeing these new containers on campus.
So it's cost effective for you and or would you add more?
Well, it's more of a sustainable initiative. So, you know, when you're doing the right thing and doing the green thing, it's not necessarily a cost question first. So this initiative isn't necessarily cost effective, but it's certainly reducing our landfill contributions, which is what, you know, our objective is from this initiative. So
yeah, there seems to be that's another very hot and obvious trend is recycling and LEED design. I'm curious, is everybody, or does everybody have to in some way adhere to LEED, whether it's renovation or new construction?
In the state of Maryland, we're required to have silver certification on all of our new buildings or renovations. And we're just completing our first building with a green roof. So it's all quite interesting, that's for sure. And we've gone to single-stream recycling, which has really made recycling work on the campus. Before that time, it didn't work all that well.
Right. Yeah, I think what we're experiencing here at CMU is there, along with this, you know, millennial theme in our students, there's, and I'm sure you guys are probably all experiencing this as well, is that, that there seems to be a generation that is extraordinarily conscious of not only the environment in general, but being green. There are groups of students that come to my office and are very aggressive and very assertive in ensuring that they see and participate and promote and advocate a lot of recycling practices. Am I guessing right that this is what all of you are experiencing as well?
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Is there anything else trend-wise that maybe we're not touching upon and maybe could bring up at a future call? And certainly at the upcoming, our next conference here in Pittsburgh, we're looking forward very much to seeing as many AFC members as possible. Anything else in classroom design, building design? I know there's a lot of planners that I encounter, and what we're seeing is a theme and a very strong trend to collaborative spaces as opposed to standard hallways of faculty offices. There seem to be almost this kind of hub-and-spoke development.
Interesting you should mention. I was just going to mention that we're creating in our new liberal arts building what we call active learning spaces, which are just that, in selected spots throughout the building and numerous on the floors, are these little alcoves with flat screen TVs and literally the walls are whiteboards and all that sort of thing, where we expect students will congregate, hopefully occasionally, with faculty because they're near faculty offices for just that type of thing. And plus we have group project spaces throughout the building as well.
That's really interesting, Steve, because I know, again, here at our business school, we have a an original lobby that goes back to 1950, and there's a large mural applique kind of as the focal point there. And what was once obviously a kind of public space really has become just that, and that is it's a student study space. The challenge is we have a faculty that are reluctant to be geographically located so close to students. They seem to still gravitate to, you know, living in their ivory towers on the upper floors and holding the traditional office hours and having students come to them.
Right. Well, we don't give them much choice here because these spaces are scattered throughout the faculty offices, which are on all floors of the building.
Oh, excellent.
At Minnesota, we are in the process of building a new building that is going to have about 17 classrooms based on the scale-up model. I don't know if everyone's familiar with that, but the classrooms are based on round pod tables rather than in rows or in individual seating. And each pod has a laptop connection and a monitor so they can display their laptop things to the rest of the class. And the instructor has control over all of those monitors as well as projection.
So is that a stepped classroom setting or is that flat?
It's a flat classroom setting. It's quite a large room most of the time. And there are circles with together tables with nine students at each table. So students can work in groups of three or groups of nine. And it's very collaborative type of a space with whiteboards all the way around the room. So the students all have whiteboard space.
Those are well represented on your U of M website.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they
and
are.
You do have a couple of videos there that I've looked at, too, which are quite good.
And the new building that has the first two that were on the website are the pilot rooms, and the new building has the final here we go with the whole building full of them kind of a project. So we'll see how that is received once it's finished.
Which website was that again?
The website that is going to have the best access to that information is classroom.umn.edu.
How many of those are complete, or are they all still in progress?
Currently two are complete.
And what's the reaction so far from students?
Students really like it. The faculty that have sort of embraced it really like it. They like the way that they can sort of have all of the thing at a large scale and as well as at a smaller scale. Some of the instructors are a little reluctant because it does mean sort of modifying their curriculum and the way that they teach a specific class. So we don't think it'll ever be the only way to go, but we're thinking they're a lot more active as classrooms, and they're a lot more, the students are much more engaged in what they're doing because they have to talk to each other.
And what kind of seating capacity are you looking at?
We go from about 45 people up to 120. The two existing 45 and 90, I want to say.
I think the website says something like 111.
Oh, that might be right.
That is a pretty big space. That's a pretty big space.
It is.
And that space was convertible, too,
yes,
the way they designed it.
And that will be the case in the new building as well, so that each room can be split in half if our course load requires smaller rooms.
Yeah, interesting. So the kind of undercurrent there is, again, a kind of shift in the paradigm away from a classic stepped or flat classroom with the traditional desk to a very adaptive environment. I would
yes.
assume it. So your tables can be configured pretty much any which way the teaching.
The rooms are flexed to be the large size. They're in the circular pods around a central pedestal that has the technology in it.
Mm-hmm.
When they're down, the tables come apart, and they can be arranged in traditional rows or however they would like.
So
you do lose laptop capacity with that, though.
I was going to say how you would manage your power and data connectivity.
We have wireless throughout the campus, so the data doesn't go away, but the connecting to the monitors and the power of the teacher to show various things does get reduced when we reduce the size of the rooms, just because we can't get the space required for the pods in the smaller rooms.
Interesting. It sounds like University of Minnesota might be a future host for one of our conferences then.
We'd love to have you. The building will be open in fall of 2010. Anytime after that, we'd love to have you over.
Well, Steve Showers is on the line. I know he's our president of the AFC. So, Steve, just so you know, I'm taking notes. We just might call the good folks in Minnesota.
Well, you know, is it Bill that was threatening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bill O'Neill.
That way. So, we'll take him up on it.
All right. Very good. Any other trends, issues that are might be of interest?
One thing in our larger classrooms, Bob again, we've gone to a dual tablet arm chair, auditorium type chair, and the students are loving it. And this is something we developed with KI, and so they do it for us. And it's amazing. Almost 99.7% of the students said they really love the chairs, and that's an awful majority.
Really, a dual tablet arm.
A dual tablet arm.
One on the left, one on the right?
One on the left and one on the right, and they meet right at the center. So they can spread out, laptops, or they can have papers, or they can have books, and laptops and whatever. And one of the things that it forces is more space between the students. Each student has their own basic chair, and there's about 3 or 4 inches between each chair, for the tablets to fold down on both sides. And I kind of wonder if that isn't something that the students really like, too, because they aren't bumping elbows all the time.
How do you keep the two leaves aligned? Do you have any problem in that area?
I've had a few problems there, and KI has come right in, and they say that the adjustments are kind of finite, and so their people do come in, and they'll adjust them. And they'll do that for 10 years.
Excellent.
Wow. Wow,
do you know which model that was based on?
I'm trying to think. It's the concerto chair, I believe.
Okay.
This has been a fascinating conversation. I'm afraid I'm going to have to, and my apologies to the group, I'm going to have to withdraw. I've got several people beating down my door. But again, if you haven't already heard of it, our next conference is June 10th through the 12th here at CMU in Pittsburgh. All of the details on the AFC site. And I look forward to the next conversation. This has been great.
Hey, Joseph, Steve, did you get my message?
I did. And actually, Steve, I have it on my notes to give you a call shortly after this call.
Great. I should be here for a little bit, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I know you get in earlier in the day. So.
Right, and I'm going to leave as well. Thanks, Jeannie, for putting it together.
No problem. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call. We'll probably do some more roundtables like this in the near future since it was such, good content going around and information going about. So thank you so much for your time today, everyone. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you,
Jeannie. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Jeannie, Eric Lawrence here.
What is that, Eric?
I'm sorry. Is this the point when you wanted to talk to me offline about a password?
Yes. Actually, hold on 1 second. Let me stop the recording.